I heard a guy on TV just a few minutes ago say, all the bad news is already factored into the market. To which I would add, all the good news is factored into the market too. Money Machine. Show 154. Friday, April 17th. Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine. I'm so glad to be back with you. It is a beautiful, gorgeous, sunny day. I've already gone for a walk today, and I'm in a good mood, and we're going to have a good show. So let's get right to it. You know, Dylan Radigan quit CNBC, too. I think he was fed up with the way the stock market was going. This on a show before. Article from Bloomberg, April 7th. The title is S&P 500 Removals May Lift 2009 Earnings. They say chart of the day, but I don't see a chart in the article. From David Wilson, he says, this year's earnings at companies in the Standard & Poor's 500 Index may benefit from, quote, survivorship bias, according to David Costin, a Goldman Sachs Group strategist, as the chart of the day shows, which I still don't see the chart. S&P 500 operating earnings would have been higher in each of the last year's four quarters in the current lineup if the current lineup had been in place. The chart displays data that Costin included in a report yesterday. Profits from the index's companies amounted to $58.29 a share in 2008. The data showed the total is 18% higher than the $49.51 actually reported for the S&P 500. All right, so you see what they're doing. They're swapping in new companies that are actually having earnings into the S&P 500, which will, I guess, boost the level of the S&P 500 index. So there you go, short sellers, sticking it to you. By changing the index. Oh, the article says 8 of the 15 companies that hurt last year's profits the most, according to Costin, were taken out of the index. Four of them, Merrill Lynch, National City Corp, Wachovia, and Washington Mutual, were bought by S&P 500 companies. Ambec, American Capital Limited, Fannie Mae, and Lehman Brothers were the others. So they had to get rid of some of these dead companies out of the index and replace them with nice, healthy companies. And so wouldn't it be better to look at an index of the entire stock market rather than some hand-picked set of just 500 companies? Why don't we look at the Wilshire 5000 as a better index? I mean, forget about the Dow Jones. Hopefully we've gotten past looking at just 30 industrial stocks, which are no longer industrial, by the way. What's Microsoft's in there? Now let's forget about looking at the S&P 500. Let's look at something like the Total Stock Market Index. And VTI, the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, would be a good representative of that, I think. We could look at the earnings of the entire market. We could look at the dividends of the entire market. And, of course, we could look at the performance of the entire market. Not that that makes any difference in our decision whether to buy it or not. Well, are you an active investor? Someone who needs to get their hand in the market? If so, join me as we go to rehab.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no.
Yes, just like Alcoholics Anonymous, we should have Active Investor Anonymous because it is an addiction. Somebody emailed me something that said he, a friend of his was doing research on a particular pharmaceutical drug and said that by taking this drug, don't know if the name of it was indicated in the email or not, but he said by taking this drug, they noticed that people became more addicted to gambling in casinos and things. And he surmised that the same thing would happen with stock picking. You know, by taking this drug, you would be more likely to gamble in the stock market. So in Active Investor Rehab, which is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com, one of the best, no, the best investing website on the internet. And it's not just me saying that. We've already looked at step one in the 12-step program for active investors. Step one is to know what it means to be an active investor. Step two was seeking a higher power. Looking at the Nobel laureates, the economists who have studied the markets, the scholars, the academics who have studied the markets, and they are dispassionate in looking and seeing the inner workings of the markets and the statistics behind the moves in the markets. Step three is stock pickers. And let me read you to you a little bit from Mark Hebner's book, which you need to get. It's the Index Funds, the 12-step program for active investors. If you're going to invest and try to achieve financial freedom through investing, absolute must, highest recommendation, have to have a copy of this book, have to read it. There's no other way. In chapter 3, Stock Pickers, he says stock pickers are focused on short term, on the short term. Charles D. Ellis, in his book Winning the Loser's Game, has this familiar quote. He says, the average long-term experience in investing is never surprising, but the short-term experience is always surprising. The confusion of most investors is derived from their inability to look at large sets of data about stocks, times, managers, or styles. Here's the reason for the confusion. With a small set of data, such as the 50 rolls of three dice. Okay, you take three dice. I've always called it dice, no matter whether it's a die or a dice. You take three of them, and you roll them 50 times, and you make a chart of each number that comes up. What's the smallest number that could come up? Be 111 or 3. What's the largest number? 3 times 6 is 18. And so you chart how many times each different number came up. And you did this 50 times. And on the website here, I'll have a link to it. In figure 3.8, he has a histogram of all the numbers that came up. Now, in this example, the number 6 came up many more times than all the other numbers, which would lead you to believe that 6 is the best choice if you're going to try to pick a number in the future. The assumption is that chances of getting a 6 on the next roll was the best of all combinations. This poor representation of a long-term characteristic of three dice is known as random drift. In the casino, they call it luck. This is similar to saying that an investor feels confident. This is similar to saying that an investor feels confident about a certain stock, confident about a certain time period, confident about a certain manager, or confident about a certain style of funds based on recent short-term experience. In statistics, this is also known as sampling error. However, if one looks at the long-term performance, or 1,000 rolls of three dice, and he has the figure for this, it's like a pyramid. It's like a triangle, with the numbers 10 and 11 highest in the middle. The numbers 3 and 18 out at the ends are the smallest. And the number 6 is about the same as the number 15, about halfway between the expected return on the expected occurrence of the number 3 or the number 10, about halfway between the occurrences likely of those numbers. The population characteristics for any large data set are best described by the average and the standard deviation, which represents the variance around the average. Investors who think they see a pattern or trend in monthly or quarterly returns are experiencing random drift, just like 50 or 60 rolls of the dice. They are being fooled by randomness. Don't let short-term trends in the market fool you about your long-term investments. The Active Investors Anonymous Rehab segment is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. And remember, get that book, 12-Step Program for Active Investors. The title is Index Funds, and it's by Mark Hebner. Check him out on the web at ifa.com. If you hunt around enough, you can find a free copy on the web. But don't tell him I told you. While you're there, take the risk capacity survey to figure out what you should be invested in, what level of risk you should invest in, and sign up for an account with IFA. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble. And for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Men Machine Show 154 is Rabbi Daniel LePan. Rabbi Daniel LePan, which can be found on the web at rabbidaniellepan.com. Known worldwide as America's Rabbi, is a noted rabbinic scholar, best-known author, and host of the Rabbi Daniel LePan Show on San Francisco's KSFO. He is one of America's most eloquent speakers, and his ability to extract life principles from the Bible and transmit them in an entertaining manner has brought countless numbers of Jews and Christians closer to their respective faiths. In 2007, Newsweek magazine included him in its list of America's 50 most influential rabbis. Well, Daniel Rabbi LePan appears on the Guru Roulette Wheel because he appeared on the Lou Rockwell Show, a couple of weeks ago now, I guess it's been. And he spoke at a conference at the Austrian Scholars Conference. Let me look at the title. The 2009 Austrian Scholars Conference. He was the lunchtime speaker. And I'm going to have a link to this. It's at the Lou Rockwell Show. It's show number 107 from March 22nd. If you haven't heard it already, it's about a 55-minute talk he gave. The entire talk is presented on the web for you. I encourage you to listen to the whole thing, but I want to take out a little snippet, which I found very interesting, and it's about making money and the morality of making money. Let's listen to Rabbi Daniel LePan.
But something, if you think about the generation of Jews that came over and were peddlers, my grandfather, a peddler, in Judaism, an honorable calling. An honorable calling. Traveled from town to town. Welcomed wherever he went. Now, today, most people think, peddler, you're going to knock on somebody's door. You're bothering them. You're disturbing them. Not what used to happen to Grandpa Lappin. They used to like it when he used to knock on the door. So I will give you through a Jewish lens what life was like for Grandpa Lappin. And I'll save all the disappointments and I'm going to compress a long and grueling day into the next 60 seconds. But Grandpa Lappin would knock on the door of a house and the lady would come to the door and he'd say, hi, do you have anything here you don't need? And she'd say, well, we've got a sort of table. We've replaced our dining room table. We've got an old table downstairs, we're getting rid of that. He says, really, how are you getting rid of it? She says, the city's coming by to pick it up on Wednesday. He says, do they do it for free? She says, no, of course not. They're going to charge $5. He says, I'll tell you what, you help me load it on my wagon or my truck here, and I'll give you $5. She says, well, that's a deal. They load it up on the wagon, and Grandpa Lappin trundles off with their table. At this point, if we did a quick financial statement on this family, they are better off by how much? $10. Okay. On most campuses, they say five. And this is fun. Grandpa Lappin stops at the hardware store, spends a dollar and some paint and a few nails, knocks on the next house. Again, I'm leaving out all the people that weren't home and the people who didn't want anything. We're just moving along quickly here. Knocks on the next house. Say, hey, anybody here want a table? And the woman says, well, just a moment. My daughter's getting married in 2 weeks' time. Agatha? Agatha comes running up. She says, do you need a table? She says, well, we're actually going to buy a table at Ethan Allen. My grandpa Lappin says, how much are you going to pay for it? She says, $20. He says, well, I got one on my wagon. You can have for $10. Now, mind you, it had some scratches and one leg was loose, but I put some nails in, gave it a new coat of paint. She says, let me take a look at it. She comes out and takes a look. She says, yeah, this will do for a starter table. And they carry the table in and they give Grandpa Lappin $10. Now, how much better off does the financial statement of the second family show they are? Also $10. So now we're better off on aggregate. The village is better off by $20. Well, no, you forgot the dollar in the till of the hardware store. And you've also forgotten the arbitrage. How much has Grandpa Lappin got in his pocket? $4. Still. And there's always somebody in an audience, not an audience like this, but at a university audience, there's usually somebody who thinks this is smoke and mirrors and that I've somehow played fast with the figures here. I haven't. It's very, very simple. I'm about to give you the finest economic definition of one of the most successful companies on the internet that made money from day number one. I'm referring to eBay. The best definition of eBay is 70,000 Grandpa Lappins working simultaneously. That's all it is. It's the greatest peddler in the world. All it does is finds people who want to rather get some money instead of the whatever it is that they've got sitting in their garage. So they're better off at the end of that transaction. And then it finds somebody who wants to give money in exchange for that particular thing because it's exactly what they want and it makes them better off. And guess what? There's an arbitrage. eBay's got a few dollars in their pocket as well, just like Grandpa Lappin. That's how it works. And so there is this deep conviction that by engaging in commerce, you're doing something good and you're doing something wonderful and you're doing something helpful for people. And so it was no surprise to Grandpa Lappin and to his descendants that when he knocked on the door to offer a transaction, people responded warmly and enthusiastically because somehow mysteriously, after he had passed through, everybody felt better off because they actually were. Exactly so. When you do something for another human being, and there is an exchange that takes place, everybody is better off. That is not a hard thing to understand. And this thing is rooted within the morality of the biblically based Judeo-Christian system.
I just loved that story. I played it in the car for my wife. And my wife is a natural-born economist. She understands the inherent economic principles behind things. And when the rabbi told the story about his grandfather, who, he helped the family make money and he made some money. And so everyone was a winner. And my wife said, well, wait a minute. Ethan Allen lost. Good point. Well, congratulations, Rabbi Daniel Lapin. You're the guru on Mad Money Machine Show 154. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. This week's tool in the crib is a PowerPoint presentation, audio video presentation that I rank as, again, in addition to the 12-step Program for Active Investors book, the Index Funds book by Mark Hebner, with my highest rating. And it can be found on the IFA.com's website, a link to it, but it's actually a presentation from Dimensional Fund Advisors, the mutual fund family that they use. They have a six-part PowerPoint presentation. Now, each part's about 5 to 10 minutes long, so it's It's less than an hour. But they explain the current market conditions and what to do. Where should we invest now? The actual title of the presentation is, What Should Investors Do Now? The presentation is given by Weston Wellington, Vice President of Dimensional. And he is one of the good guys in investing. I just love the way he saves old news articles about predictions and things and then brings them back out years later and says, all right, let's see how they did. So the presentation, I say it, is in six parts. Definitely take the time to watch this. Part one, what is Dimensional's approach to managing money under adverse business conditions? Part two, how do recessions affect stock prices? Part three, why didn't we see the problems coming? Part four, how do recent stock market returns compare with previous downturns? Part five, and listen up, is nationalization a threat to the free enterprise system? And part six, most importantly, what should investors do now? There were two main takeaways from this presentation. One, he talked about gold and looked at, you know, which is better to invest in inflationary times, gold or treasuries? The answer may surprise you. And he looked at nationalization. Well, he compared it with other countries around the globe, countries that are perhaps less free than the United States, and looked at their stock markets in history. The answers may surprise you. And what should investors do now? He says, coming off of the bottom, the race back to the top is rapid and difficult to catch. Now, those are my words. Watch the presentation for yourself. I'm going to watch it again until I've practically got it memorized. It is that good. That's our tool in the crib this week, Dimensional's approach to investing. And like other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. The best things in life are free. You can keep it for the birds and bees, not give me money. That's what I want. All this talk in the news about banks being, you know, marking their assets to market, marked to market. They have all these real estate holdings on their portfolios, and they're whining because the real estate's not worth very much, and if we mark it to the market price, then our portfolio won't look very good. Oh, yeah. Well, what about our stock portfolios? What about if we mark them to market? They won't look very good either. Where's our bailout? Yeah. Well, Jim Cramer, I think last week, celebrated his 1,000th show. And I say, who cares? You know, you used to have to read the Wall Street Journal and CNBC to get finance and economy news. Now it is everywhere. I was watching Desperate Housewives. It's the thing my wife and I do together. And even they are talking about the economy on this fictional show. So now the economy is everywhere. Including right here on the Mad Money Machine. It's so great to have you come along for the ride with me. I'm Paul Douglas Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes being marked to market to make a Mad Money Machine. I will see you next Friday. Don't forget to check out maybe Wednesday or Thursday next week if I do a Planet Boyer podcast on this same feed. It's like the DVD extras for the Mad Money Machine. See me at twitter.com/madmoneymachine. Skype me or call the voicemail line, 571-366-7121. I think that's the number. It's been a while since anybody's used it, so give me a call and let's figure out what to talk about on the Madman Machine next time. In the meantime, go figure out what your risk exposure should be. Take the risk capacity survey at ifa.com. Index Funds Advisors. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. Matching people with portfolios. I'll see you next week.